Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 158 of DM Discussions, the podcast for players and DMs alike, where we cover a wide variety of topics to help you with your games. I'm your host, Ryan Reeder, and with me, as always, is my good buddy, Ben Bumhopper. How you doing, Ben? It's been a little extra time.
Yeah, you know what? How I'm doing? We'll just say I've recovered. We pushed it a little bit because Ryan was on vacation, and then when he was back and we were ready to record, I was very sick and not feeling well at all. So yeah, but we're back, we're both raring to go, and pretty happy with what we get to talk about today.
Yeah, there is a lot of news that has built up over the last few weeks, as well as a brand new book, which is super cool as well. So we're going to jump into the news real fast and then kind of talk through first impressions on the new official content, which is the Ravenloft book. So first off, D&D Beyond has introduced story journals for maps, which is pretty cool. Let's see, changing note-taking in your sessions. So you can actually jump into maps and add notes to things. The players will have their own journals that they can use to
eventually
just throw in there. Yeah. From maps, you just tap the J key and you can start capturing what happened without slowing the session down.
Yeah. Right now it's only working for DMs. But you know, the idea of being able to have like kind of more of a journal while you have stuff up and running, especially like an encounter or something like that, is very handy. And then even if you don't have an actual physical map going, I mean, as a DM, you have the screen up all the time anyway. So even if you're not, you know, like broadcasting the map and, you know, making it interactable to your players, you can throw that stuff in there already, which is nice. Like personally, I have everything in like a Word doc that I'm kind of trying to put, you know, my session notes and everything, but with having everything open all at once, sometimes it's kind of hard to really kind of jump in and you know, make the notes that I need at the time. Whereas with this, the fact that it's just right there, you know, on a screen that's already going to be open and stuff, I think is pretty great.
But yeah, it's super helpful for people that are using maps.
Yeah.
Especially.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, that's the kind of the caveat with all of these updates that we're talking about with maps, you know, the VTT that D&D Beyond has, because a lot of these updates are for people who use them, which I know that some people do use it in person as well as, you know, like online like I do. But, you know, any sort of update, any sort of add that just makes a DM's life easier and just like, you know, so much less stressful, I'm all for. So I'm actually pretty excited about this, and I will probably start taking more time working with it. I'm looking forward to having like you know, a search function added. It automatically, like, you know, puts the dates when, you know, the whatever the notes were actually put in and stuff. And you know, they're saying that, yeah, this is what is going on right now. They've already like rolled out kind of a roadmap what they're planning on putting into it. So it's pretty great. I'm excited about it. And I think it's actually a really cool feature that we really didn't see coming.
It's very much needed for people, especially who are running their campaigns fully online, having a place where you can put in quick notes and then eventually players being able to pop in quick notes is huge. I don't use maps a ton just because my group plays in person. But one of the things we like to use is we just have a shared Google Doc, and my players take turns taking the notes for the session. And I highly recommend doing something like that, because as a DM, you're already doing a ton of stuff, and it can be very hard to either take notes in the moment or sometimes remember everything after it happens, because you were thinking about so many other things during the session. So it's really nice to have that assigned to a player or round robin it. That's what we do. And then they throw it all into a shared doc so people can jump back in and read any of the past stuff, look up some of the stuff in previous sessions. It's honestly worked really well, because I originally started out doing all the notes and, you know, DMing. And that was, it was a lot, because I would finish up a session, I would go home, and then I would sit down for 20 or 30 minutes and just try and write out. I was kind of dumb when I started, because I started writing out like in story form, which is super cool, but it takes a really long time. So in the second campaign I did, I started doing bullet points, and that helped a lot, but it was still all on me. And so now in this current campaign I'm doing, transitioning that responsibility in a round robin to the players has helped a lot.
Yeah. And with that, for in maps, there will be a player journal. There's a communal journal. The DMs will have their own. So it's basically a really great tool for everybody to just kind of keep track how they want to, and still be able to kind of look at the communal, like, what did I miss? Did I forget something for my notes? Or if you're like me, when I'm a player, I write my notes as what my character witnesses. So if I'm not there, it's not in my notes. So I might forget something really super important that I was technically told later on, you know, that we never covered. So it's something that'll be kind of handy to kind of, you know, have an idea of what happened in the history of the game, for if I missed a session, or if, you know, my character wasn't available, or I forgot to write something down, which, you know, I don't know how many times I've been playing as a DM or a player where it's like something really big happens. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is great. And I'm just so transfixed and completely forget to note it at all. So, yeah,
this is a
really cool added feature, I think.
Yeah, I completely agree. Next, some fairly big news. D&D Studio is introducing a D&D community advisory group. This is something that has kind of come about as part of the survey. They mentioned the winner community survey specifically. And thanking people for it. They're reading it, acting on it, and they want to keep doing this regularly to check our course. Themes came through consistently: trust, game quality, and value, especially for D&D Beyond subscribers. We're very excited about the 2026 roadmap and the seasonal model, and we're focused on showing through action our commitment to your table. That means fewer surprises, clearer roadmaps, and better supported tools. And so since Dan, who is the writer of this blog, came on last summer, he's been listening directly through the monthly AMAs, Discord state of the game updates, creator YouTube channels, UA feedback, reading comments, and of course the survey. He also talks about going to GaryCon and talking to Luke Gygax, who's Gary Gygax's son, about bringing more Greyhawk into D&D. Which is really cool. So that might be coming up soon, is one of the projects in a future season. But I just to kind of sidetrack for a second, and Ben, I think you would agree with this. I think this year so far, and then, you know, like the last bit of last year has been one of the best as far as transparency and communication goes.
Oh. It's 100%.
Especially from the D&D Beyond side.
Yeah, so much so. It's one of the things that, especially after the kerfuffles of previous years, has really like given me a lot more hope and trust in the brand. You know, by showing what they're listening to with our feedback, like really, you know, taking to heart some of the things that, you know, people are commenting on in those surveys or just by talking to them and everything. I see a lot of support coming towards us, and I think it's absolutely fantastic. And the fact that they're so open about design choices, why they do the things they do, or, and just even previews of things, much less like, you know, taking the time to do an AMA or just saying like, hey, someone said we needed a roadmap. That's a really good idea. That'll help. Let's make a roadmap. You know, just like a simple suggestion that turns into an incredibly great thing that is valuable to the entire community. You're right. Yeah. The transparency has just been amazing for the last few quarters.
In some ways, it's kind of been... There was kind of radio silence-ish for so long. There was very, very few studio updates other than, you know, announcements of products and then the barrage of marketing that came with them. There was very little community outreach and content to kind of share like what was coming up, what they were thinking, feedback based on a lot of people's, you know, wants, especially when, you know, it comes to D&D Beyond. So I've really liked this direction a lot, and I'm really hoping they continue it.
Yeah, for a game that really relies on community to be run and have fun, they're leaning in towards the greater community to really kind of mold and work it for the betterment of everybody.
Yeah, which is exactly how it should be. And I mean, to that point too, Dan continues, last summer I shared we were forming an annually rotating D&D community advisory group with a simple goal: bring trusted community leaders into the room early so we can help stress test decisions, surface risks, and make better calls before things are final. We built this group by bringing together a variety of creators, store owners, event organizers, community builders, and educators, each bringing a different lens on what D&D is and can be. And since forming in December, so about, you know, 6-ish months ago at this point, the group has met with leads across our team to discuss early products, concepts, and D&D Beyond tools, and to challenge our approach. Alongside feedback we're hearing more broadly from players, creators, and community, they pushed on the lack of roadmap, which led us to revisit our plans before sharing the 2026 roadmap timeline in March, which, who knows, maybe that was part of why it took so long for them to initially, you know, release anything for the year. And we're all just like, what is going on? Where,
exactly.
Where is things? Some topics are still far out, and this gives us a chance to adjust earlier. And that's part of the point. This group engages early while there's still time to change course. He says it doesn't replace Unearthed Arcana, surveys, research, and conventions, or the many other ways we listen, but it's one more channel built for consistent, candid input from people deeply involved in the game. They also say they compensate members for their time, as we would any professional consultant, but we expect candid, unfiltered feedback, and we'll rotate membership so the group evolves as the community evolves.
Yeah.
And then there is a big list, and we'll obviously have a link to this as well in the show notes at dndiscussions.com, so you can check out the full list, links to all their socials and kind of what they're about. But it seems like a fairly diverse group, which is fantastic.
Yeah, one of the things that they mentioned in the post is that they're, you know, bringing you know, creators, store owners, event organizers, community builders, and educators. And I think having that different aspect of a lot of different things really helps out, because, you know, all of those, you know, groups are kind of on the front line of seeing everything that's kind of going on, what's happening, and really be able to provide some fantastic feedback. I'm, again, just super excited about all of this. And I like the fact that it is going to rotate yearly. So it's not just the same people in the same spots. They'll be able to continuously bring in different perspectives and different ideas on things. And
yeah, that's smart.
I'm really excited about it. Of course, I'm a little bit even more excited about it, because going over the list of people.
Oh, yes.
The owner of my local game store that I love, Silver Dragon Games, just happens to be on this first D&D community Super advisory cool. group. So, Scott,
Super cool.
Congratulations. That is awesome that you're on it. And I am very happy for you. I've been able to play in a game or two that he's DM'd, and he's a ton of fun. I mean, he's a ton of fun just as the owner. Every time we go for like D&D day and stuff like that, he's, you know, very fun to be around. But, you know, being in his game, he's got a huge background in, you know, TTRPGs and D&D and stuff. And it's pretty great. So I'm very happy for him for that. And it fills me with a little bit of pride that the owner of my local game store is one of the first ones on the advisory board. So yeah, go Scott.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very, very cool. But yeah, the to close out, the group asked to share a short statement about what the work means to them. And so they said, as the first D&D advisory group, we wanted to take a moment to introduce ourselves as a diverse group of professionals from across the RPG industry, longtime players of the game and members of the community. We care deeply about the future of D&D and tabletop gaming. We all joined this panel with a sense of responsibility and a fair share of skepticism, which, to be fair, that is warranted given the events of the last few years. We are here to offer honest, independent feedback to Wizards of the Coast, ask hard questions, and raise concerns directly. We share our perspective, but what they choose to act on is ultimately up to them. Since we began, Wizards has actively listened and engaged in good faith discussions with us, which has created a productive exchange of ideas. We're grateful to be part of this community and look forward to continuing this work and the conversations ahead. That definitely makes me hopeful. Mm-hmm. That definitely makes me hopeful. There are certainly several names I recognize on the list. There's several I don't. But I do feel like these people will engage in good faith and hold their feet to the fire, so to speak, when they need to. So I don't think this will be anything but a good thing for D&D as a product and as just such a massive cultural phenomena that it has grown into over the past, you know, 5 to 7 years, and having a good rotating board of community members who actively want things to be better and to, you know, grow and thrive is a very good decision on Wizards' part. And I hope they keep this up.
Yeah. Plus, the good news is that since it does rotate, if we keep doing this show long enough, eventually they'll get to the bottom of the barrel and one of us will be on the advisory board. I vote for you because I think you'll do a much better job of this than I would. But eventually they've got to get to one of us. So, you know, whether it be, you know, 2057 or something like that, we're going to get there.
We're very old.
Nah, just
have all the experience.
Young at heart.
But it is super cool that your friendly local game store owner
I think is
a part of it. Yeah, absolutely love it. Absolutely love it. All right. So next, there has been new content drops. Remember that old content drop program that started up for subscribers?
Yeah.
Well, they are dropping content kind of you know, every few weeks, monthly. The cadence isn't like fully set in stone, but there is a new June drop that just dropped a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, with new monsters, spells, magic items, and more, which is super cool. New spells for players, a few new magic items, 4 new, I guess, kind of bad celestials, like angel type things. Celestial horrors is what they call them specifically. And some honestly pretty good ones. We've got a Angel of Obsession at CR6, Angel of Vengeance at CR9, Angel of Death at CR14, and an Angel of Slaughter at CR25. So some really cool, just like scary angels.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Have you looked at any of those stat blocks yet?
Yes.
Yeah.
The Angel of Death especially was, super interesting.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. Yeah. They have some really cool stuff. I'm excited about it. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, we've talked enough about how, you know, slushies can be bad. And, you know, we've kind of done some Monster Fixer stuff, if I remember correctly, at some point on some of those. So having some actual real, hey, these are here to really screw with your players, you know, versions of Angels, I think is pretty great.
Yeah, it's going to be really fun. I like that they're doing kind of this alternate form of content drops, and they're doing it in a way that they can. We've talked about this before, like DM's Guild being the, you know, the farm for the major leagues type thing. This is another way they can build up that talent, and current talent that's out there can kind of get their swing in the big leagues type thing. And I really like that, because the more programs and the more opportunities and avenues there are for kind of up and comers to, you know, shoot their shot and to get to develop content, and especially in a, you know, kind of official way through this program, I think is really good, because a lot of the D&D team right now were these people 3 to 5 years ago.
Exactly.
Which is super cool. Super, super cool. And speaking of drops, they also did just recently an update on the program to kind of talk a little bit about where they were, especially based on some of the feedback from the AMA and such that they had on that a few weeks ago.
And the two big things, email that was sent out saying, hey, what do you think of drops?
Yes. Yes. There was a little survey thing for that too. And the big thing they talked about is the two things that they got wrong with drops: content sharing and non-subscriber access. On the content sharing front, they dropped another article just 3 days ago, where they announced that as of, you know, just a few days ago, the 11th, I believe, all D&D Beyond drop player options and monsters are now enabled for master tier content sharing.
Yes.
It's huge. It's huge. Like, this is a direct, people gave feedback that it was really sucky having these locked into only subscribers being able to do this, especially for the master tier that has the sharing and could share literally everything else except this stuff.
Yeah.
So that's super cool. Super, super cool. And they even said by next Thursday, so June 18th, in this case, all D&D Beyond drops maps content will also be enabled for master tier content sharing. And basically just said, thank you for your feedback. It's a big deal. This was I know, not just ours, but many people's biggest issue with content drops when they first came out. It's just, why can't you share even like just the player stuff? Because it doesn't make much sense for me as a DM and a master tier subscriber to get all this player stuff, but then my players can't use it.
Yeah, that's such a huge thing too. And, you know, it's one of the reasons why I was a master tier in the first place, is that I want my players to be able to, you know, have access to the different things that I've got, you know, whether it's character options, backgrounds, you know, whatever. But because of that, I also share in other campaigns where I'm not the DM, and having access to all those different monsters and everything like that benefits the DM and the whole group. You know, it's just the same as if I had a book that I had, you know, just a physical book that I could just hand to the DM and say, hey, use stuff from here. It's same exact stuff. So yeah, makes sense.
Exactly. It's a really nice thing to have. And then on top of that, they also talked about drops availability for non-subscribers. And they said, we didn't tell players about any way in which they could get drops content without a subscription. While this was a possibility we had discussed internally, we made the wrong choice at rollout not to commit to anything. And they're here to correct that. We will commit to releasing at least a yearly D&D Beyond drops bundle on the D&D Beyond marketplace every year in May, covering the previous year's content and to make it purchasable for all players. We have ways to further augment this with player feedback, but for now, they wanted to make a baseline commitment that was clear. So think of all this now is basically subscribers get early access to this stuff, and then they will do a roll up of all the content at least once a year in May, and anyone will be able to purchase it for permanent, just buying it permanently.
Yeah, which I think is also the right way to go, because if I were to, you know, in my subscription, if I lose access to all that stuff, I would want a way to be able to, you know, buy it back or have it in some form. So not only does that help non-subscribers just all around, it helps people who had access, who, you know, for whatever reason had to end their subscription. And I think that that's a smart move as well.
Yeah, I completely agree. This is really a smart move for them, not just from a community standpoint, from a business standpoint.
Yeah,
too, honestly, because there's a lot of people who may not need to subscribe, who may just be in a campaign or two, want to make a character or want to make a few characters, but they still want access to all this extra content. And so this is a great way to get it without having to pay monthly for it. It's just it'll just be a buy once and you're done.
Yeah, even more so, it's one of those things where you're in a campaign where someone shared and they have one of these really cool backgrounds. It's like, oh, that's really cool, great, I want to use it. Oh, if I'm not in that campaign, I can't, but now I can because it's available to me. So boom. So yeah, good stuff.
Very cool. And then finally, they are celebrating the International Day of Play. Obviously, this is passed a few days ago from when we are recording this now, but the International Day of Play took place on June 11th, and for the second year in a row, they're offering a new short adventure, great for players and dungeon masters new and old. So there is a claim page that you can go to right now. We'll have the link in the show notes on dndiscussions.com, and you can add the brand new small adventure Borderlands Quest Goblin Trouble. Borderlands Quest Goblin Trouble was last year's, and they made that available to claim again. But this year's is Borderlands Quest Dagger Danger. Whew, it's like, say that five times fast. I'm gonna have to
Oh, dang. I thought I was gonna be able to show you, but nope.
Both of those are now available to grab if you want to get some free content, that you can just unlock, permanently on your account. So we'll have the link to those in the show notes on dndiscussions.com. Yeah. Okay. So a lot of news. We've been gone for a few weeks, lot to catch up on. But one other gigantic thing that happened, while we were off was, they released a new book. It's called Ravenloft, The Horrors Within.
The digital version is available if you have pre-ordered. The actual physical version comes out on, the 5th, 16th.
Oh, it is out. It is out.
It is? I thought it was out on the 16th.
I have, copies. The copies are in my friendly local game store right now.
Oh, well, good golly, I was wrong. I went off of the timer on D&D Beyond, and it still says it releases in a day and 11 hours. So maybe
unless they released it a little, maybe they do like a week or two early at, friendly local game stores, but my physical copy that I bought is here. My stuff is unlocked on D&D Beyond right now, which is awesome. The alt cover, if you are an alt cover collector, that are in your friendly local game store, is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. They have just been absolutely killing it with the alt covers. I kind of wish I had been an alt cover collector in some ways, but unfortunately, and that's my one beef still, is there's still not a good way for me to get the alt cover and get the D&D Beyond version of it at a discount as well.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I understand. I'm kind of the same way, because some of those alt covers are just beautiful. Like, I would have loved it for the you know, the 5.5, 3 books, but well, it is what it is.
Yeah. But the book is chock full of content. There are 17 fully realized Dark Lords and 16 different domains of dread. And yes, there is one extra Dark Lord, but one domain has two.
Yep.
So, yeah, if you're wondering why there's a slight discrepancy. We also have our new and revised horror-themed subclasses, the College of Spirits Bard, the Grey Domain Cleric, Phantom Rogue, Shadow Sorcery, Sorcerer, and Undead Patron Warlock, as well as the new Reanimator Artificer and the Eldritch Hollow Warden Ranger.
Yes.
So lots of really cool stuff. An extra 41 monstrosities, 10 domain denizens, 17 Dark Lord stat blocks, obviously, some updated creatures from 5e, Origins, Dark Gifts, extra Bastion stuff, which is super cool. And again, just pausing, please put Bastions and the Artificer in the SRD.
Please.
Please put Bastions and the Artificer in the SRD so that people can support them with third-party content directly and officially.
Mm-hmm.
PSA. But yeah, Ben, there's a ton of stuff in this. And I know we've had a little bit of a chance to like dive in and start looking through it. What are your thoughts as you've started perusing the new Ravenloft book?
Well, here's the thing. First of all, I was so wrong on everything that I thought about Ravenloft beforehand. I essentially thought that Ravenloft was Barovia, and it was the Strahd campaign. Like, I thought that was like the world, how, you know, Forgotten Realms is the world. Well, I mean, technically Ravenloft is the world, but I didn't know that it's broken up into, you know, just all of these different dark domains just all over the place that you can't get, you know, from one to the other unless you're like super lucky and stuff because of the mists in between all of them that acts like a border. That is cool. I think that is really interesting, and it makes so much more sense now and how you can have like a horror themed setting instead of like the entire world being horror. It's like, it's this like kind of big chunk of land, and that's kind of about it for this type of horror. But I gotta say that as a fan who's not, or as a D&D fan, who's not the biggest horror fan, this has actually like kind of opened up a lot of really cool ideas, and also, you know, different things that I now have access to, you know, kind of play with fun stuff. The new species are great. The Dampier, which is essentially a vampire, the Hexblood, you know, kind of like a ghosty witch thing, Lupin, which is a werewolf, and the Reborn, which is, you know, like Frankenstein's monster. Those are neat. I think that's really neat. The feats that they offer, the dark gifts, are pretty cool because those are, you know, you get some sort of really cool thing to go with it, but it also has a downside to it. Like if you roll a one on something, some really bad things can happen, which I think is really cool. And I like having that kind of, you know, risk versus reward in the feat for the setting. I think that totally makes sense. I love the fact that all the different domains are, you know, they have a section in the book. They talk about the leader of that domain, or the lord of that domain, which I think is great. But one of the things that I think is the best part of this entire book is it's in chapter 4. It's basically creating domains of dread. So you can create your own. You can create a dark lord. It's really great and talks about different types of horror so that you can kind of theme it how you want. It goes over like body horror, cosmic horror, dark fantasy, folk horror, ghost stories, gothic horror, disaster horror, occult detective stories, psychological horror, and slasher horror. It's just all these different genres kind of you know, splayed out, given instruction and everything. And I think that that is one of the greatest things that this book brings to the table. If you're looking for, you know, running a game in that sort of, you know, atmosphere. And will I run one in one? Probably not. Maybe a one shot or something. But having all those tools at my disposal is just so great. And I am so excited that this book is out, even if it's something that I'm not going to be doing a whole ton with. On top of that, too, I love the fact that they have added Innsmouth in here so that you can actually have a full-blown Cthulhu story with a stat block for Cthulhu in your D&D game. I love that.
And not only that, there are some of the monsters included are Cthulhu monsters.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. There's a ton of really great things in the bestiary that they've added between different, you know, horror things, different like, you know, classic like vampire things versus just really gross and disgusting, like, you know, body horror things. It's pretty great. There's so much in here that just adds to the whole idea. I'm very happy with this book.
Yeah, they've got like Shoggoths. They've got the Star Spawns and the Star Spawn emissaries. Like, I'm a big Cthulhu fan. I've talked about that before. I've played Call of Cthulhu. It's great. I've played Mansions of Madness, Arkham Horror, board games and such. All very cool. So seeing this kind of officially in D&D is honestly super fun. I feel like you could get some really fun one shots out of running like Innsmouth, Domain of Dread, with Cthulhu, with some of the Cthulhu monsters. They've actually got a map, a nice Innsmouth map that you can show. There's like a player version of it and a DM version that you can look at with a bunch of different locations. Cthulhu himself obviously has a big old stat block, CR 25. It's really, really cool. There's a lot of stuff to it, and this is only, you know, one of 16. But having not only these, but there's a bunch of maps in here too.
Well, and
that is super cool.
They also have like campaign arc ideas for each of the domains. Again, for Innsmouth, they've got, you know, levels 1 to 2. This is kind of what, you know, they recommend doing. Levels 3 to 5, maybe something along this line or these lines. 6 to 16. This is what we recommend. 17 to 20, which, you know, fourth tier D&D stuff. Great. And I mean, the fact that each of these dread domains has something in it that just kind of gives you guidance on how to run the game. In that exact, like, you know, horror genre and stuff is pretty cool. And it's mapped out so well for everything. Like in Barovia, even though there's a whole huge giant campaign for Strahd, they still have him in here with, you know, different ideas for different kinds of campaigns so that you don't have to do the whole, I'm just going to get the book and everybody's going to do it. Everybody's played it before. We're going to do it again. You know, you can kind of come up with your own thing. Like their campaign arc has, you know, something from 1 to 5, 6 to 8, 9 to 10, you know, it gives you so much more, freedom than here's the actual campaign. It just gives you like, here's just a little bit. Here's the bits of information in Barovia. Have at it. And I think that that's great. And it works really well as a, you know, just a reference material as opposed to just the full on campaign.
Yeah, it's the timing is weird because it is a horror book in the summer, which is definitely a little strange that this one wasn't, you know, like here's our fall book.
Well,
and the magic one wasn't this one, but
it's in the summer, so it gives you time to plan a campaign for the fall.
Yeah. That's probably the reason. It gives you a few months so that you can get all read up and prepped up to run some horror stuff. But yeah, no, it's a solid book. I will say it does have a decent amount of content from the original Ravenloft book.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have that one, obviously not everything is going to be new. There are chunks of it that are the same or very similar. If you're looking mainly for the player options, yes, there's a lot of updated 5/5 subclasses. There's the two brand new ones, which is really nice, especially for Artificer. Getting more, you know, official Artificer content is always super fun in that. But I do think this does a much better job than the original Ravenloft book for the most part, just because it fleshes out the Domains of Dread a lot more and also gives you legitimate stat blocks, which is very nice versus just ephemeral things, just talking about them in lore. If you actually want to run them now, you can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And then, yeah, like I said, just, you know, defining out the different genres of horror, I think is really important for especially someone like me who hasn't, you know, really delved into a bunch of horror content other than, you know, some movies here and there. But, you know, having the different principles, the types of villains and identities and stuff, as well as like, you know, torments, plots, just different settings and stuff. I mean, it really comes out to being a great roadmap into creativity if, you know, you're unfamiliar with it. But even more so, it'll just help accentuate anything that you are able to just, you know, bring to the plate from experiences that you've already had with different media or content or anything like that. So just, yeah, overall, this is a really good book that I never thought that I would be as like, you know, keen on as I am. I'm happily surprised.
Yeah. And I think the Bastion section is actually super cool too. We're just starting to mess with that system in my current campaign, which I'm pretty excited for. I think it'll be pretty fun. But this one specifically has rules and guidelines for like Bastions in the Mists. Bastions in the Domain of Dread work well in campaigns that focus on a single domain or where Dark Lords aren't likely to seal their domain borders and cut characters off from their bastions. But they can create them in any domain. They're haunted bastions. They can have like, supernatural events happen at them. And they have all sorts of like descriptions for haunting. They have several new special facilities to add to the ones that you can currently get through the Dungeon Master's Guide, like Spirit Vault, Lightning Generator, Ancient Altar, Cabinet of Curiosities. So it's a fun, I'm glad they didn't forget the system exists, because that has definitely happened before, where they will introduce something cool and then, you know, forget it exists. I mean, heck, the original 5th edition DM's guide has a ton of extra stuff in it that most people don't even know about, and that is also never touched on again in any official 5th edition content. So I really hope that they continue to not forget some of these cool new systems that they put in place as they've jumped over to 5.5.
Yeah, and Ryan, I can't believe you forgot the ever important seance parlor for your bastion.
Of course.
Yeah, it is the place to use a Ouija board. And
how are you going to connect with all these supernatural spirits?
Yeah, exactly. It's the way to do it. You need a seance parlor. And if you just happen to have a hireling named Leota who runs it, that's fine too.
They also have the official tarot deck.
Mm-hmm.
For Ravenloft that came, I think, in like you can get it separately, or it came with like the really big expensive bundle, but they also talk about using that and doing fortune readings like in the seance parlor and being able to use that deck during play to kind of, you know, enhance the mood and just add that extra cool element, especially if you're in person, that physical element to your campaign.
Yeah, which I, again, think that's really cool. They have everything kind of figured out, listed, tells you what the cards do, how to do a reading. I mean, it's tons of stuff in here, which I think is pretty great.
So yeah, I'm excited to dig in more. If I do some, like, you know, October Halloween one shot stuff, which I do like to do some of that sort of thing, especially around holidays. Like, obviously we do our winter one shot every year, that one of our favorite things to do. And we sometimes get to even run a version of it for players that we have. And so taking this and doing one shots, there's so much content and so many ideas for that type of thing in there. It does kind of make me want to dive in to do something like that for, like, spooky season this year.
Well, you know, it's funny that we're kind of talking about this and, you know, the different dread domains and stuff. Like I said, I've said like five times now in this episode, I'm not the biggest horror fan. But who says that Halloween Town from Nightmare Before Christmas isn't a domain, a dread domain? I mean, if you think about it,
I mean,
it fits.
If you think about it, the the, like, liminal space where you go to all the different holiday towns is basically the mists.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
Leading to each domain of dread.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although some of them are just slightly less dready than others.
True. I mean, who knows? Maybe our Christmas one shot is already writing itself based off of this.
Oh my God. I got This Is Halloween stuck in my head already.
Perfect. My job here is done.
Oh man, we need to write this down. Like,
we'll forget.
We can do Nightmare Before Christmas one shot. Or maybe we'll do a Halloween one shot this year and it'll be Nightmare Before Christmas.
Ooh, oh, that'd man. Be fun. Setting it up into our very first two-part one shot, where the second part is the Christmas part.
The two-part one shot, which is a two shot. It ceases to be a one shot.
I don't know. I mean, usually we come up kind of mostly on the fly with this, but I mean, having a little planning for this, it could be kind of fun.
Yeah.
We'll consider.
I think I've mentioned it before, but every once in a while I get to be in the area and I get to see Ben in person. And a few years back, he ran one of the coolest little one shots that I've ever played, where he based it off of the Great Pumpkin from Charlie Brown. And it was very fun and phenomenal. And I got to break out my Leonin Paladin, who is one of my favorite characters. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
A lot of fun. I'm sure we talked about it in an episode around that time. That's probably. You know, like episode 50 or something ridiculously long ago. I know we talked about it, but that was very fun. And yeah, we'll have to get you to, like, put out a little thing on that at some point.
Yeah. The biggest thing that great I remember Halloween from that shot was a good charm spell, bringing, Sally to your side, and where she used, what was it, like a wand of wonder or something, and she got two fireballs off on the Great Pumpkin.
Yes. Yes. And then there was like a Snoopy and Woodstock stand-in monsters.
A dire wolf and like a fledgling rock or something like that. I think I did.
Yep. That we had to beat. Yeah, it was very fun. Very, very fun. So yeah, more stuff. More stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
But it is out. At least in your friendly local game stores. Because I know it. I've seen it.
Otherwise, it'll be out everywhere else on the 16th.
Yeah. But yes, it is that is what you're looking for if you like collecting the player content, if you want some new monsters. It's a pretty solid book overall.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. I mean,
okay.
Again, you heard it from me. The guy who doesn't like horror thinks this book is fantastic.
Yeah. No, it's I think I'm a little jonesing for official books too, because it's honestly been a bit of a slow drip since 5.5 dropped. And so having this kind of be the kickoff to it ramping up a little bit, because we've got, and you know, Ravenloft's great. Ravenloft's fine. Love Ravenloft. But I personally am far more excited for this, like, Season of Magic.
Yeah, me too.
That's coming up next. Like, I've always been, magic characters or magic users have always been like my thing.
Mm-hmm.
That I will gravitate towards playing over other stuff. So getting more cool things for that new, like, magic, like more spells, especially more magic-y subclasses, all that sort of thing, anything magic, that just makes me happy. So as great as Ravenloft is, that's what I'm really looking forward to right now.
Very cool.
Okay. So that kind of wraps up our last few weeks of all the things that happened while we were on vacation or sick.
Yes.
and we will hopefully not be on vacation or sick again for a while. But one last big thing that happened while we were away, and I swear this might be potentially, but probably not, the last time we talk about Neon Odyssey.
It will not be the last time, I can tell you right now.
So there's been a that campaign, that Kickstarter campaign wrapped up just a few weeks before the Kickstarter for Neon Odyssey launched. D&D Shorts had a big D&D Kickstarter. I think it raised like $5.5 million. It was super huge, a bunch of different books. I think we've talked about it a little bit, but at the time, it was the most successful D&D crowdfunding campaign. Then, of course, Neon Odyssey dropped and, like, surpassed its record in like a day. but not only did it do that, the other two biggest, not even D&D, just TTRPG crowdfunding, were one, the Dungeon Crawler Carl, which everyone has told me I need to read these books. I have the audiobooks. They're in my queue. I'm going to read it. It sounds exactly up my alley.
Yeah, I've got the first
literally book everyone is
sitting
talking
on my nightstand. I haven't started it yet.
Yeah, literally everyone has told me you need to read these. These are great. They seem very, very universally loved. But there was a big TTRPG crowdfunding for that recently, and it basically came in at number two, right behind the Cosmere, which has freaking Brandon Sanderson behind it. So of course, like 15.2 million, that is the record. That is a crowdfunding record for TTRPG. That is
huge.
That is the cliff. That is the mountaintop for the Stormlight part of the Cosmere RPG. Wildly, Neon Odyssey, as it came to a close, raised $16.1 million, surpassing both Dungeon Crawler Carl and the Cosmere to not only become the highest funded D&D thing, crowdfunded thing currently, but also the most crowdfunded TTRPG project, period.
Mm-hmm.
Which is absolutely wild. So we just wanted to say congrats to the Evantress crew, because freaking awesome. I think this is like exactly the type of thing that people really wanted to see. It's described, you know, space odyssey, hope punk. Just it's very colorful. It's very bright. It's very hopeful and kind of happy, but also, you know, you get your Star Wars vibes, you get your Cowboy Bebop vibes. You get all that old, that space opera vibes, and people just latched onto it. Us included. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty incredible, like record and milestone just for the TTRPG community as a whole, because as we talked about on our interview a few episodes back with Tammy and Charles from Monte Cook Games, like 10 years ago, 500,000 was like the mind-blowing amount to raise for a campaign, for an RPG. Like, it's kind of crazy how far things have come since then, and just in just a decade, how much the community base for tabletop RPGs has grown to be able to essentially fund not one but two, or even three in this case, almost simultaneous crowdfunding things between Dungeon Crawler Carl, the D&D Shorts. I'm forgetting the name of it off the top of my head. I'm looking it up. Helena and Ryoko's Guide to Mythozoology. And then obviously Neon Odyssey. Three of these massive things at the same time, raising, you know, 6 million, 16 million, and like 14 or 15 million,
mm-hmm.
all within the span of like 2 or 3 months. Like, that's wild. That is absolutely wild to me that we have grown from, there are just a few crowdfunding things, and 500K is so big and so mind-blowing, we started a company type thing, to we just had three big TTRPG things within 2 or 3 months that raised collectively like $35+ million.
Yeah,
that's wild. Absolutely wild. So it's come a long way. Like, I think that just really kind of puts in perspective how much the community has grown around this genre, the tabletop RPGs in general, over the last 10 years, and how, you know, D&D obviously has been a big part of that, but so many other things, so many offshoots have then been enabled and then also grown the communities in their own ways from a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
So it's a very exciting time. It's a very exciting time to be into TTRPGs. There has never been more choice in TTRPGs than there is today, between just like big studios or small indie, you know, single page, few page, like Zine type things. So it's just very exciting. And we wanted to give them a big shout out and a big congratulations, because it's a huge, huge, huge milestone. And if you want to pre-order, pre-orders are, even though the crowdfund is over, pre-orders are open now. So we'll have a link to that in the show notes as well. But yeah.
Now we just need crazy those times to be made and in our hands within the next couple of weeks. It'll be a lot longer than that, but oh man, I'm chomping
a lot longer than that. But it's good, because I need that time between now and like next November, or
to finish
January of probably more like January, February of 28 to finish my campaign up. But it is, I've already talked to my players a little bit about it, and I'm like, if everyone ends up being on board, it's like, this is something that I really want to do. Even though I love my homebrew world, I've been doing campaigns in it for 10 plus years now. I feel like this would be a very fun campaign detour for just a little bit.
Well, you know,
just something new.
Your homebrew world can still exist in that same universe, whether it's in the future or it's just, think like Star Trek First Contact kind of thing. Like, oh yeah, we don't go there. It's a backwards place. It's they're so low tech.
It's very fun. So I'm excited, but I'm just kind of almost more excited of just what a lot of these things in the past several months just mean as a community, and the support and the widening of the player base.
Yep.
So very, very cool. All right. And with that, that will bring us to the end of our episode. Of course, as always, we usually like to talk about what we're doing in our own games. Ben, have you gotten to play anything since we last talked?
No, not yet. Still working on personal stuff and everything, getting through a lot of stressors before I can really do something. But the next D&D game day has been announced for our local store. And we're going to be joining in, and it is a horror themed, basically vampire themed day. So Nevermore and I, we're waiting for signups. We have our favorite DM. We're waiting to see if she was going to be running something. So, the first set she wasn't in it. It's like, okay. Second set she wasn't in it. We're like, okay. Well, we still have options for those. Then the third group for late in the night showed up. She was the DM. We immediately joined, for that game, or signed up for that game. We didn't even read it. I'm going to read you the title of it now, because after
so this is just like, we love the DM, whatever running.
Exactly.
Just sign it up.
And then we read the title, and then we both got insanely excited. So the title's The Audit of Staten Island, a What We Do in the Shadows themed Ravenloft comedy one shot.
Oh my God. I want to play in that.
Yeah, exactly.
Holy crap. It's
going to be amazing. So the Mists of Ravenloft are terrifying, oppressive, and incredibly behind on their property taxes. Your dysfunctional household of immortal weirdos and long-suffering familiars has a massive problem. High Auditor Vane is arriving at midnight to shut down your domain of dread for abysmal horror metrics. With the master vampires panicking and the basement infested, it is up to your crew of roommates to fix the code violations, appease the local werewolf pack, and save your home. So, yeah, I mean, 100% in. I am so excited. I've already made my character. I'm basing it entirely off of he's still pretty new. He's a new vampire. Maybe, was bitten in the 80s or the 70s or something like that. So I'm going to be playing a vampire named Jerry Thompson. Because I'm just like, whatever. And I'm going with the College of Spirits for my subclass as a bard. And I'm like, yeah, this is going to be great. And the neat thing about the College of Spirits is that when you do a give bardic inspiration, you can summon a spirit that you can use to do certain things and stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'm just gonna have fun with this. And so I've named all of the six different spirits that I have access to, and they're just like, this person is for the beloved one is someone named Elaine, and they're my best friend who died from a piano falling on them. So, fun stuff like that. Renegade is Tony the Snake. He's an 80s gang member in a leather jacket and chains who died trying to siphon gas from a cop car. The dumbest thing. For fortune teller,
Cleo. Oh, my
fake goodness. Phone in psychic that read someone's fortune wrong who got revenge. So, yeah, just I'm going for full on stupid comedy stuff here. And it sounds like it's going to be fun.
Such a good game.
Yeah, I
cannot wait to hear.
It is next weekend.
Oh my goodness. So next episode we'll be able to get the report. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it's gonna be great. I'm so excited.
Stoked.
For this.
I am stoked to hear about that. That is freaking awesome.
Yeah. So that's gonna be in my future. That's next weekend. Yeah.
Very cool.
How about you? Did you get a chance to jump in and play?
Yes, we actually played just last night.
Ooh.
We've got two new people joining the campaign, which is super cool. But we haven't fully gotten their characters yet. We want to make sure they have very strong integrations into the world, and a lot of good reason to be with the current group. So I ended up meeting with the current group, and we were able to kind of close the loop on several like downtime things that we didn't get to mm-hmm. fully finish out because it was like 1 a.m. and I was like, we all need sleep.
What?
The last time we were together. I know. Right. So it was really cool. Getting to do some kind of family scenes, which was really mm-hmm. fun. Our artificer got to meet the archmage of the city and give him that crazy magic bottle.
That's
that
cool.
Was full of they call it the Mr. Bottle, full of distilled magical essence, where the archmage was just like, our artificer was basically saying, I was really considering just starting to tinker around and play with this and try and figure it out. But my friends were just like, no, you shouldn't do that. You should give it to the Archmage. And the Archmage is basically like, you have really good friends. This thing could have blown up the continent under the right circumstances. And it's just like, and it was a very fun little reveal just to see them all go, oh, that's what we had. Oh no.
That's a definite, potentially catastrophic failure for a yes. one.
So funny. It was great. Like it was just a really well done, lots of great role play, like I said, closing the loops on several things before, the new characters come in. So I'm really excited. I'm glad we were able to do that. I feel like we're in a much better spot now.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to play here in a few weeks as the new characters come in too.
Well, very cool.
Yep. But with that, as always, thank you so much, Ben, for being a wonderful person. I'm glad you're feeling better. Thank you so much to everybody else for listening. And just hanging out with us for an hour or so every few weeks as we just get to geek out about one of the things that we just really love doing.
Yeah.
And of course, before we go, Ben, why don't you tell everyone where we can be reached?
Of course. You know what? I'm just going to drop it right there. DNDiscussions.com. It's got everything you need. It's got a link to our Discord, which is a fantastic community, just a bunch of really great people. If you have any questions about D&D or TTRPGs, or you need brainstorming help, or you just want to tell about, you know, your game, what's going on, that's a good place to do it. I've got a link on dndiscussions.com to our Discord server. There you'll also find links to our Blue Sky accounts. The show is at DN Discussions. Ryan is at TBK Zord. I am at Ben Bumhofer. And of course, you know, if you don't like, you know, kind of a public setting, or you want to reach out and just, you know, tell your story because you're a little shy and you just want us to hear it or see it, or if you have a question that you want to contribute to the show, which we love answering those questions too, just email us. Send that to dndiscussions@gmail.com. It is a very easy way to get a hold of us. All it takes is just a couple, you know, bits of a typey type on a keyboard. Try that out. I don't know what I'm saying. That sounded weird. Anyways, as for myself, I also do another show called Plus Five to Hit. It is an actual play podcast for a homebrew world for Dungeons & Dragons, and we're having a bunch of fun in there. you know, we're getting to a mystery of a town that was kind of sucked out of its world and placed here, and we're trying to kind of figure out the mystery behind that, and I'm really excited to see where it goes. And oh boy, we had a really good last session, so definitely check out Plus Five to Hit. It's a lot of fun. Aside from that though, this show, D&D Discussions, thank you very much for listening. Thank you for all of your support. All of you are just absolutely great, especially those in our community on Discord. We love talking to you, love hearing from you. And of course, Ryan, thank you so much for joining me this week, because I always have a blast. And again, Ravenloft, who knew? Besides everybody else. But yeah, it's really cool. But with that, everybody, thanks again for listening. And until next time, roll high and be good to each other.
Take care, and we'll see you soon.